The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
We've got new data on the election, and I think we can confidently say what went wrong now and how the GOP can fix it. Vivek Ramaswamy came out with a video after the election, after the Republicans got shellacked, and he laid out two reasons why the election went the way it went. I think it is spot on. Take a look.
We got our asses handed to us tonight. Republicans, we lost in New York City. We lost in New Jersey. We lost in Virginia. Democrats swept all three. In the case of New York City, it was actually a Democratic Socialist that won by a pretty decisive margin. What's the lesson for us? I think there's at least two lessons we're going to have to take away from tonight. And we're going to. I'm going to make sure we do. The first is we have to lead the way in offering answers on the affordability challenge that so many Americans are facing. I hear it in my home state. We have to bring down costs, bring down those electricity bills by producing more energy. Bring down the cost of housing by building more homes, and by the way, also bringing down property taxes. Bring down grocery prices, bring down healthcare costs. Ultimately, the way you fight inflation is stop printing and spending so much money at every level, federal government all the way to state and local. We're spending too much money as a government that drives inflation. That's number one. And lesson number two is that we don't want to practice identity politics. That's not us. It's not the way as Republicans. It's not the right way as conservatives. Leave that to the woke left. Race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, national origin. That's the stuff of the woke left. Don't imitate them. Focus on merit. That's who we are. Focus on actual tangible policy solutions that lift people up rather than the rabbit holes that some in the online fringes may fall into in focusing on genetic identity like the woke left. Don't do it. It's a trap, and the more we fall into it, the more we're going to actually continue to see results like tonight. On the flip side, on the positive side, if we offer solutions on affordability, if we leave the identity politics nonsense to the woke left instead of imitating them, we're going to be just fine. And I'm still confident we're going to do great things in Ohio and across the country in 2026. I'm looking forward to it, and every once in a while, it helps to be able to light a little fire under our feet.
So it does if we learn our lessons. If we don't, we will lose again. I talked about the identity politics and all of that on yesterday's show. You can go check that out if you want. But today, I want to talk about the economy side. Right now, inflation rose to 3%. That's as of September. So things are not looking good on that front. The Fed is cutting rates right now, not because they can, because inflation is cooling, because it's not. It's at 3%, which is, again, 50% higher than their target rate of 2%. They are cutting rates because the job market is not looking so good. And the Trump economic plan, this go around, is not the same as his first term. His first term, his economy was cooking. We know it. That's why he won in 2024, because that's what we were expecting. That's why independent voters overwhelmingly supported Trump on the economy. And we just have to be honest that it's not the same this time. It's one of the biggest reasons why people voted for Democrats this election cycle. People just want a better economic outlook. That's like, it's really simple. Elections are that simple. It's the economy, stupid, right? People have said that over and over and over again. It's why Trump won in 2024. It's why Democrats won in 2025. Here is a poll that shocked me, and it proves what I'm saying. This is from Morris. They came out. The most important issue, voters said, was the economy, and that's pretty much always the case. If you look right now for New Jersey governor, Sherrill was plus 30 on favorability on the economy. People believe she would do better. Virginia governor Spanberger, plus 27. Those are massive numbers. And just to show you that it's not always that way, in 2024, President Trump was up plus 63. And again, it makes sense because Trump did so well his first term and he was up against Kamala Harris, who was just going to be a continuation of Biden. It all made sense. But that is a net 92-point swing towards Democrats from 1 year ago. So we can talk about all these other things. I think the identity politics is certainly part of it. I think they look at the crazies in the Republican Party, I'm talking about independents, and they go, I don't want to be a part of that. But I think more than anything, it is that poll right there. That is hard data showing you that the Democrat Party, for whatever reason, is being trusted more on the economy. Whether we think it's logical or not, it's probably not. People do not think the Trump economy is working. Honestly, 99% of America's elections historically are decided by who Americans think will make the economy stronger. It is that simple. Or, of course, it's a referendum on the other party, and they're saying, well, I don't know about this, but that isn't working. And I think that's what happened this election. That certainly is what happened in New York. I mean, people are looking at Democrat socialism, and they're saying, look, I don't really know about democratic socialism, but I do know that what we've been doing in New York over the last 20 years isn't working. So, hey, referendum on them. I'm going to give it a try. I don't think it's logical personally, but that is 100% what happened. That's why the GOP lost. It is that simple. Some people, like Steve Bannon, have suggested that it's the fault of moderate Republicans. I think that's interesting. Here's what he said.
Then in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, bro, what are you spending time in Iowa? You just ended your political career last night. As a native Virginian, you destroyed the Republican Party for a generation. There are seats in the House of Delegates that are unfathomable that could have been that were lost last night to a supermajority in the House. And hey, guess what? This is going to have implications because they're rolling. Virginia's going to go 10-1 in House. They're going to be like New England, or they're going to be like Illinois, or they're going to be like California, the Commonwealth of Virginia. It is a disgrace that you push that lieutenant governor, that you weaponized against Trump in 21 and 22 when you wanted DeSantis. You weaponized her. And then you rigged it. There wasn't even a primary. She's going to be the candidate. And she was an unmitigated Trump-hating disaster.
And 1 year ago, I probably would have agreed with Bannon, actually. I would have said, look, we need the most Trumpiest candidates possible because he is taking people over the edge. But right now, I'm not so sure. I'm really not. And it's because of the state of the economy. I don't think that Winsome Earl Sears, who he's talking about in that, is a strong candidate. Don't get me wrong. I don't think she was good. I don't think she was ever going to win that race. But I am not so sure that there's any evidence that Trump candidates did well in this election. If you look, that's just not true. Also, if Trump wanted people to win, like Earl Sears, he could have put his firepower behind them and endorsed them. And he didn't. And by the way, he even endorsed Andrew Cuomo in New York, a lifelong Democrat, in order to try to beat Zohran Mamdani. And still, he was unwilling to endorse Earl Sears in Virginia, who is a Republican. So by Bannon's logic, it's actually Trump's fault. That's what he's saying. I don't think I agree with that. I think that this election was not a referendum on everything Trump, but I do think it is a referendum on what is now Trump's economy. Because guys, you got to remember, we've been in this for 10 months now. This is not Biden's economy anymore. And I'm talking about the perception of Americans. If you've studied economics, you know that the biggest mistake you can make if you really want a good economy is to measure things too short, to look at what we're doing now and think it's going to have an impact the next month. But the reality is, that's what Americans expect. And so at a certain point, you have to do your best to take up policy positions that are going to make at least neutral, if not positive, effects immediately on Americans. And 10 months at this point is all the patience that Americans could muster. And now the referendum is on Trump's economy. There is a glimmer of hope, though. The thing hurting the economy, most likely, in my opinion, is the tariffs. As we'll talk about later in the show today, the tariffs will likely be struck down by the Supreme Court. They are doing hearings right now to talk about it, should decide in the next coming days, weeks. So ironically, I think that Trump is going to be saved from himself. And when I say himself, I mean Howard Lutnick and Peter Navarro, the people who are trying to make the tariffs happen. I don't think Trump really is super economically minded. I think he's just business minded. And I think he's listened to some bad actors who are telling him that tariffs are the way when in fact they're not. But it doesn't matter. It's going to get struck down. Trump is going to be saved by himself. Also, in terms of the national debt, which is obviously the driving force to inflation, can we just talk about for a moment the fact that the government has been shut down for a record amount of time. I think we're at 35 days at this point. It's never been shut down longer than that ever in the history of the United States. And nothing's changed. Like, nothing's new. Our lives have not changed at all. There's been some airport delays. Okay, yeah, sure. That's it. So if you want, let's like fund the aviation agencies, since that's 0.002% of the debt, right? Or of our budget, rather. So fund that, sure. Other than that, nothing changes. The only other thing that anyone's really noticed, and that's obviously in the news, is the subsidies for food and healthcare. The food thing can be taken care of with private welfare. There's already so much private welfare in the United States. Food stamps do not need to be a thing. And maybe you could have them for veterans and, you know, a shorter list. But that's one thing that can just be taken out by private welfare. The other thing is those healthcare subsidies are money that we all spend through inflation and taxes every year anyway. So if inflation, for example, went down to 1.5% and your tax burden went down $5,000 a year, you wouldn't need the subsidies in the first place. The economy, you would feel so much lighter, trust me. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if we want the economy in a better place, like, let's just stop the spending, let's just keep the government shut down forever, and let's get rid of the tariffs as well. You know, be a conservative. Like, let's actually go back to conservative principles, like follow the Constitution, actually have a budget, don't pass taxes without Congress, you know, which is what Trump did in his first term, was praised for. Let's go back to that. Before we get back to the news, guys, I wanted to invite you to subscribe to my new Substack. Substack is a weekly newsletter that comes right to your email and is completely free to you. I talk about things I wasn't able to get to on the show, or I want to go a little bit more in depth with, either because Big Tech is going to censor me for saying it or just wasn't able to get to it. So go check it out right now. Completely free to you. The link is in the description below. The Supreme Court will overturn Trump's tariffs, and this was always going to be the case, guys. I predicted this 7 months ago when it all got started. Today, the Supreme Court heard testimonies from many people in the Trump administration, as well as from different companies trying to lobby to get rid of the tariffs, and it is safe to say it did not go well for the pro-tariff group. Here is Chief Justice Roberts questioning the Trump admin about the tariffs.
I think this is a question for the other side as well. It's two-facing. Yes, of course, tariffs and dealings with foreign powers. But the vehicle is imposition of taxes on Americans. And that has always been the core power of Congress. So to have the president's foreign affairs power trump that basic power for Congress seems to me to kind of at least neutralize between the two powers, the executive power and the legislative power.
Let me say two things in response to that. First, the notion that the taxes are all borne by Americans and are not borne by foreign producers whose goods are imported is empirically, there's no basis for that in the record. It's actually a mixed.
Well, who pays the tariffs? If a tariff is imposed on automobiles, who pays them?
Regardless of who the importer of record is, there'd be a contract that would go along the sort of line of transfer that would allocate the tariff, and there'd be different. You know, sometimes the foreign producer would pay them. Sometimes the importer would bear the cost. The importer could be an American, could be a foreign company. A lot of times it's a wholly owned American subsidiary of a foreign corporation. So it gets allocated. The empirical estimates range from like 30% to 80% of like how much is borne by
Americans. It's been suggested that the tariffs are responsible for significant reduction in our deficit. I would say that's raising revenue domestically.
So that's a fancy way essentially of saying that we pay the tariffs, right? We know this is how they work. Companies in America pay the tariff, they pass it on to the consumer. And the problem is, for the Trump admin, is that this is so obviously unconstitutional. This is basic constitutional law. Congress has the power of the purse. They also have power to tax or to not tax. The president does not. Rand Paul made this point on Fox News this week as well.
Do you want to see him struck down by the Supreme Court?
I want to see the Constitution have meaning. And the Constitution said that taxes originate in the House. Tariffs are a tax. And anybody who tries to say tariffs are not a tax, just not serious people. Our founding fathers wanted the taxes to start in the House because the House was elected every 2 years and the closest to the people. But they were very, very specific. We fought the revolution over taxation without representation. a president cannot levy taxes without the approval of Congress. I think the Supreme Court's going to strike this down, and it's not for any personal vendetta against the president. I like the president. I wish him and our country success. But we have to do things in an orderly constitutional manner, or it can lead to chaos.
I don't know if the pro-tariff folks understand that not only tariffs are a tax, but also that it kills the market every single time when the executive branch is in charge and not Congress. And here's why. The markets thrive always on predictability and on stability. And when Congress is in charge, something, it just takes time. Like, nothing gets done. We know this about Congress, right? And that is good. That it takes consensus. It takes compromise. And making a new tax is predictable. Like, we all knew with the new budget stuff that was happening with the big, beautiful bill at the beginning of the year, right? That took months to happen. It was predictable. There was compromise. Things got done slowly. But when one person is in charge that has ultimate authority, like Trump, like a president, it is not stable. It is not predictable. And we've seen that over the last 6 months. The tariff rate on China, for example, and that's just one country. But let's say you're a company dealing with many countries, because maybe you have a product that, you know, you need, you source materials that don't come from the US. They don't come from any one country. You have to parse it and take it from 10 different countries. Just in China, the tariff rate has changed more than half a dozen times in the last 6 months. And if you're a company and you're dealing with multiple countries, how do you operate that way? And the answer is you don't. And so your stock tumbles, your revenue tumbles. And that means you don't hire more people. You don't develop new technologies. The economy suffers. It means that more than 50% of Americans own stock in publicly traded companies in the US. So it's not just these rich billionaires. It's not just the jobs. It's everyone's 401ks and IRAs. Now, on the other side, Trump makes an interesting point that maybe the president should have temporary power for negotiations when other countries enforce new tariffs on the U.S.
The hearing today, a lot of people were trying to read through the tea leaves, what the justices were asking. Some were saying they were overly skeptical. You can't really do that in Supreme Court hearings, but how worried are you that they may unwind this thing?
Well, I heard the court case went well today, but I just heard that a little while ago because, as you know, it was just 2 hours ago that they finished up. But I will say this, it would be devastating for our country if we lost that. Devastating. I think it's one of the most important, maybe the most, but one of the most important cases in the history of our country. I think taking tariffs away so that we can have national security. So, as an example, President Xi, he hit us with the rare earths, and I hit him with a tariff, 100% tariff on top of all the other tariffs that you're paying. And they called in 10 minutes and we made a deal.
You're saying you're happy with what you came out of it.
If I didn't have tariffs, we would right now, the entire world would be in a depression.
So I do think that's an interesting point as well. Tariffs can be used in negotiations. It seems to be what Trump wants to do, though we've never actually gotten a clear answer on what the point of the tariffs is. Sometimes we're told it's for negotiations. Sometimes we're told it's the new tariff regime. Sometimes we're told we're trying to just take it all down. We don't know. Different members of the Trump admin have said different things at different times. So no one has any idea actually what the main objective of the Trump admin is for the tariffs. Sometimes they'll say it's for manufacturing jobs, right? Like we just don't know. But I think there is a good argument that maybe the president should have some sort of short-term response to other people's tariffs. So perhaps the best way to do this would be the Supreme Court striking tariffs down and then Congress passing a law that says, similar to like war, for example, that a president can implement tariffs for, say, 30 days on a country in response to them putting a tariff on us. That seems like it might be a happy middle ground. Again, that would act similar to war, where a president theoretically can go to war for 180 days before Congress has to officially declare war. Obviously, we haven't done that since World War II, so I don't know if that's as relevant, but that's how it might work. Justice Amy Coney Barrett brought up a different point, which is also very fair and interesting, that we have already as a country been taxed $800 billion in tariff taxation this year. So how are we going to give all of that back if this gets struck down?
And then if you win, tell me how the reimbursement process would work. Would it be a complete mess? I mean, you're saying before the government promised reimbursement, and now you're saying, that's rich, But how would this work? It seems to me like it could be a mess.
So the first thing I'd say is that just underscores just how major a question this is. The very fact that you were dealing with this with quotas, there's no refund process to the tunes of billions of dollars or embargoes, but there is here. But for our case, the way it would work is, in this case, the government stipulated for the five plaintiffs that they would get the refunds. So for us, that's how it would work. Your question, I take it, is about everyone else. We don't have a class action or anything like that. With respect to everyone else, there's a whole specialized body of trade law, and 19 U.S.C. 1514 outlines all these administrative procedures. It's a very complicated thing. There's got to be an administrative protest. There was a harbor management case earlier that this court was involved with in United States Shoe, in which, you know, the refund process took a long time. There were any number of claims and equitable relief.
So a mess.
So it's difficult, okay. Absolutely. We don't deny that it's difficult, but I think what this court has said in the McKesson case in 1990 is that serious economic dislocation isn't a reason to do something.
It would be a nightmare, 100%, but I think that that attorney brings up a good point, which is that good is good, wrong is wrong. Just because something is difficult does not mean we shouldn't do it. You'll remember when Trump was running for president last year, one of the arguments against the deportations for the 11 million illegal immigrants that we have in our country was, it's just really hard. Like, it's too hard. We shouldn't even try. And I don't think that was a good argument. I think it's like, well, we're going to try anyway, because that is what the right thing to do is. Finally, I had to show this clip, guys. While Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Roberts, they're all asking thought-provoking questions. You may not have agreed with them. You may like the tariffs or not like the tariffs, but they're asking questions that made you think. You know, if you go watch other videos, very profound. And then we had Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the McDonald's of Supreme Court justices. And she was just on a different talent level from those justices I previously mentioned.
Did any president under TWEA use that language to impose tariffs?
Well, yes, President Nixon's 1971 tariffs.
Not a tariff. That wasn't a tariff. It was a licensing agreement during wartime. It was a specific thing. I'm talking about.
I'm referring to President Nixon's 1971 tariffs.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yes, I thought you meant Lincoln.
Not only that, but then it was upheld by the Court of Appeals with exclusive jurisdiction under this very phrase.
Can I back you up just a second? I'm sorry. You're talking so quickly.
Three letters, folks. DEI. She is horrible. What is clear from this hearing is that Trump's tariffs are over. I will be shocked if they stayed. I think that's going to be a big win for Americans. Trust me, the economy will do better. And in the future, if Democrats want to go crazy with tariffs when they're in the White House, they won't be able to now. The progressive left is a cult. I talk all about it in my book, A New Cult. I know you've heard about it because I talk about it every single episode. But Christmas is coming up. It makes a fantastic gift for your eccentric uncle. So go check it out right now. The link is in the description below. Thank you so much for watching today's show, guys. Please like the video so other great patriots like yourselves will see it. And if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, give the podcast a rating so people will find it there. And you can tune in every single weekday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the live show, or you can watch another video right here.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.